CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Here's another edition of The World is Crazy in Chicago. The world makes no sense in Chicago. I guess that's a better way of saying it. Or I don't know what's better. As my distinguished guest waits for me to finish this oration. So the front page of my Chicago Sun-Times, home delivered as always, you're welcome, Sun-Times, says this: CPS selective magnet schools appear to take hits under new budget formula. This is an article by, who wrote it? Oh, Sarah Karp and Nader Issa. So how do I get this out? So just so you know, the magnet schools are like the cream of the crop schools in the city of Chicago. They're the ones with the greatest reputation. They're the one with the selective enrollment. They're the ones that down through the world. Originally, if I'm going to give you the long historical analysis, they were created in the late 70s, early 80s as an attempt to avoid busing, forced busing in Chicago. So as like everything else, it has to deal with race relations in my beloved adopted town of Chicago. So down through the years, they've required a reputation as a school where you want to send your kid. And the parents who send their kids there and the kids who go there feel very passionately about their school. The school, in the lead of this article by Sarah and Nader, is LaSalle Language Academy, which has deep meaning to some people listening to this podcast right now, including one producer, Nate. It's under the threat of budget cuts. Because bottom line is this, as always, the school system of Chicago is running out of money. This has been a chronic problem in the city of Chicago for as long as I can remember. I am not making this up. At one point, the city of Chicago's public schools were unable to make their payroll. This happened when my distinguished guest was about 9 years old. Distinguished guest, I want you to think about that. You were 9 years old, so you weren't paying attention to any of this stuff back then. And the public schools of the city of Chicago couldn't make their payroll. And the Tribune wanted the teachers to come in anyway. This shows you how demented the Chicago Tribune has been forever. The editorial board, should show up anyway, like any of these guys would show up if they weren't getting paid. Anyway, so it's always been on the public schools of Chicago is always on the edge of bankruptcy, never enough money. I'm putting it out there right now. The reason is because most of the kids who go to Chicago public schools are poor and black. That's it. That's my position on this. You could disagree with me if you want. But that is why the city of Chicago's public schools are always on the edge of bankruptcy, because basically we don't really care. That's just, I'm saying it, folks. That's how I view the world. Anyway, on the same day as my beloved Bright One has this article about the magnet schools, the cream of the crop schools in the city of Chicago being, having to have cuts, My beloved Chicago Bears are holding a press conference. They're having a press conference to announce that they have grand plans for a dome stadium on the lake. It's like madness. Okay? So when I first saw the story breaking about the press conference, it was in, where was it? I think it was Block Club. Shout out. Block Club does a great job. I think it was $3.2 billion. All right? That's it. That's what they were saying the cost of the stadium would be. By the time I was about ready to do this show, I saw Crane's update, and it said, Bears want taxpayers to fund half of $3.2 billion Chicago Stadium. the final price could be $4.7 billion. I'm like, oh my God, the thing's going up $1.5 billion in one day. This is insane, people. We can't fund our public schools, but we have enough money to build the Bears, a dome stadium on the lakefront where they shouldn't even have more construction anyway. Isn't the lakefront supposed to be open and free to all? We have freaking lost our mind. And I say this as a sports fan. I'm a diehard Bears fan. They could go play in Arlington Heights. They can continue to play in Soldier Field. They, you know, go to Wrigley Field. Good. Go to Comiskey. Why can't they just play at Comiskey Park where the White Sox play? Why do they need a dome stadium? If you can't afford your schools, you can't afford a stadium for your football team. That should be the bottom line in the city of Chicago. All right, I'm done orating. I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest, get her thoughts on this. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
I'm Ramana Hussein. I'm a member of the Sun-Times editorial board and a columnist at the newspaper.
Yes, and as a columnist and as an editorial board member, less as an editorial board member, more as a columnist, you're constantly having to give your opinions about things. That's what you do for a living. So I'm setting you up. What's your opinion about the Chicago Bears putting that big old Bears paw out there for a handout when we can't fund our public schools? Ramana Hussein, go.
Well, first of all, I wanted to tell you, Ben, as someone who grew up in, came of age in the 80s and was in high school for the late 80s, mid to late 80s, I can tell you my experience. I just remember there were fewer magnet schools back then. Everybody wanted to go to Lane Tech or Whitney Young. Those are the two ones that everybody was scrambling to go to. My family friends, I can tell you, like, most of them were immigrants who came here in the late 60s, early 70s, including my parents. They would do anything they could do to get to the suburbs because the schools were just so bad. They would go on strike every year. And I did have friends who lived in the city, and their parents worked for the city, so they lived in the city. They sent their kids to private school if they could afford it. And I had some friends who went to Chicago public schools, and they're very, like, proud. And a lot of them, you know, I went to Von Steuben, Whitney Young, Lane Tech, like I mentioned. Those are the schools that a lot of my family friends went to. And they're very, like, proud of those schools. But yeah, it was, you know, it just showed you how much inequity there was. And everybody was like, I don't know if I could live in Chicago. I think the last couple of years we've seen that there's more people coming back to live in the city. But then there's, like, you know, there's more selective magnet schools. But then it's like the competition to get into these schools. It's like college now. And just what I've seen the last couple of years, I mean, it is mostly the brown and black schools. If these magnet schools are losing money, imagine what these schools that are like the neighborhood schools and how much they're suffering. And so I think you do bring up a good point. We want to spend so much money on these stadiums, whether it's the Sox or Bears, and we don't seem to have money for the schools, or don't seem to have the will to, you know, come up with more funding for the schools or try to help the schools. I've mentioned to you, Ben, I'm not a huge football fan in general. I've never been to a Bears game in my life. I do like Soldier Field. I like the old incarnation a lot better than after they renovated it. And I mean, personally, like, I can tell you that we're getting a lot of letters and taxpayers are furious. Even the people who are fans of the White Sox and or of the Bears, they're just like, why do we have to be on the hook for this, you know, this stadium. I don't know when this show is going to be airing, but we are expected to meet with the Bears some point this week to talk to them. This we means editorial board about the stadium. They haven't had the press conference yet, right? About the 4.6 million or 4.6 billion, I should say, stadium yet, right? Correct.
I think it's happening as we record this show.
Okay, so we'll know more after this. So I'd like to hear more from the Bears, but I mean, my gut instinct is just like, why do we need this? That's just a question I have. I just feel like we already have a stadium, and I know there's been talk about the Bears going to the suburbs, and you know, we hear that about the Sox leaving, but I just think there's a lot more questions than answers at this time. And I feel like most taxpayers are not feeling it from the understanding I get from most people. I haven't heard of one person yet saying that, yeah, this is just what we need, a new Bears stadium. I have to tell you, a few weeks ago, my husband Mick and I went to go eat at a Mexican restaurant in Uptown, and the Bears president was at the same restaurant we were at. And of course, like, my back is towards, you know, Mick is like, I'm talking to Mick, and he was just like, I'm not ignoring you. I just think the Bears president is sitting a few feet away from us. He's like, don't turn around, don't stare. So I just kind of like, just slightly, I went to recognize him, but Mick is like, I'm pretty sure it's him. And I'm like, as soon as we left, I go, why don't you go up to him and ask him? And he goes, no, I'm not going to bother him while he's having dinner with his family. But we kind of assumed it was him because he had some sort of NFL kind of hoodie on. So we're like, it's got to be him. Mick said it looks exactly like him. It's got to be him. So that's my Bears tidbit.
Wow. Breaking news. Ramon and Mick having dinner with the Bears president. If it's the Bears president, I'm guessing that it was Kevin Warren.
Yeah, Kevin Warren.
It was Kevin Warren. Okay. And
it looked like he was there with his two adult children, from what I understand. It looked like he was there with his family, and fanfare or anything like that.
Leave him alone. That's a whole other topic. You see somebody that's a celebrity, you don't know them, but you know who, you recognize them. I'm a big believer in leaving them alone. Okay, just leave them alone. All right, they don't want to be bothered by you. I've seen very few celebrities in my life, just out there. I saw once, and this is from your generation, years and years and years ago, I went to a pizza, like a little pizza place in suburban New York. This is probably in the early 90s, late 80s, and I saw Matt Dillon sitting at the table next to me, the movie star Matt Dillon.
I would have gone up to Matt Dillon.
Okay.
I'm just saying there's some celebrities I would be like, okay.
I left them alone.
You know what? Most people in New York and California say that's the difference between people in Chicago. They're like, oh, everybody in Chicago would be like, oh, but in New York and California, I guess they leave them alone. I would leave them alone for the most part. Maybe if I saw him getting up at a restaurant, I'd be like, oh.
It's just suburban New York. It was his hometown, suburban New York. Anyway, neither here. We went on a tangent. So you gave me so much to riff about. So let me just point out that originally the Bears looked like they were heading to Arlington Heights, and the resistance they got from Arlington Heights came from the school board, elected school boards in Arlington Heights, that did not want to give the Bears too much of a property tax break for their new stadium in Arlington Heights, on the grounds that if you get the Bears pay less, everyone else has to pay more. And that stirs resentment on the part of homeowners because they become reluctant to spend even more money than they're already spending. And I presume they're spending a lot in Arlington Heights. And so they resisted that. And so that's when the Bears sort of tilted their interest to Chicago. And again, I just want to point out the difference between the suburbs and the city. And this gets to the heart of what Romana said. When people, parents, like Romana's parents in Chicago and thousands of other parents had to make that decision about where they were going to live, their primary interest was the future of their children. And they understood that their children's future was determined to a large degree by what kind of education they got. And they weren't messing around. They were going to go to a place that took educating children serious as the number one priority. So in Lincolnwood, in Evanston, in Skokie, in Arlington Heights, the number one priority is taking care of the kids. In Chicago, the number one priority is taking care of the billionaires. And that's how I view this. So even when your quote-unquote elite magnet schools don't have enough money to pay their bills, what does it say about all the other schools in the city of Chicago, the struggles they're having? I personally feel what you just said, Ramona, that story you began with, that that narrative that you began with, underscores the point even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Ben, my family, my parents, when they first came here, we lived in the city. I was born in Lakeview. My dad had a residency at Illinois Masonic. We lived in Lakeview, and then we were in Rogers Park for my mom says, like, it was even less than a year. And then we literally moved right outside the city because my dad, you know, like, literally Lincolnwood is like right outside the city. And, you know, my dad's like, oh, the schools are good here. And we had family friends. We had like one, it was probably the only other Indian family at the time who lived in Lincolnwood, and they lived there. And my dad kind of, I don't know if he followed him, but, you know, my dad liked the homes there. And he was just like, oh, it's close enough to the city. So, you know, I grew up literally outside the city, and my dad worked in the city and, you know, jumped on the highway. But, you know, my dad came from an impoverished background. He was the only one in his family who got educated. And, you know, my parents, you know, they didn't know that much about the United States, but they knew that they wanted their kids to go to a good school. So whenever people make fun of me for going to school in the suburbs, because, like, there's a lot of people who are transplants. This goes back to our, like, Chicago. There's a lot of people who are transplants who came from other parts of the country, and they're always like, oh, you're suburbanite. They live in a gentrified part of Chicago. I'm like, yeah, well, I want to know what kind of school you went to. You know what I mean? So you hear a lot of that, you know, people saying stuff like, oh, and I totally respect people who, you know, lived in the city. I have friends, and I have friends who lived in, like, Saugeenash and Edgebrook. They live, like, right outside the suburbs. So, you know, they went to school, like, at private schools, but I've always had people sneering at me because I went to the schools.
Okay. So I need help with this.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've ever taken a deep dive in this particular thing. We talked around it. So I need your help and your analysis in this one. So I do not understand. I do not understand why someone has, who lived, went to, grew up in Chicago and went to, forget the schools, because more often than not, they went to a private school. So just forget the schools, although that adds to it. Why does someone who grew up in Chicago have bragging rights over someone who grew up in Lincolnwood or Skokie? I do not understand this. Not being from Chicago, I'm trying to understand the Chicago mentality. It's been a struggle, Ramona. People in Chicago are so twisted and weird. They have such a weird, why is it somehow or other superior to be from Chicago, a city that half the people hate everybody else at any given time? Why is it superior to be from Chicago than, let's say, I'll just pick any suburb, Skokie, which I think is one of the greatest towns in the world. Skokie, Illinois. I love Skokie, Illinois. What a library. Chicago, you should only hope to have the library, downtown library system. I don't know if you've ever been to the downtown library in Skokie.
That's where I would do my school projects when I was a kid. I went to high school in Skokie. So,
yeah, Niles West. You're right. I always think it's in Lincolnwood, but it's actually in Skokie. All right. So explain to me, why would somebody from Chicago think they're superior?
People think that they're hard because they grew up in Chicago. And someone like me is like, oh, we know where you grew up in. But I do that too. I make fun of people who aren't from Chicago too.
Hey, time out. It's because they think they're like gangsters?
Not gangsters, but they think they keep it real. And, like, you know, people like me grew up in the suburbs. And the funny thing is, I'm just saying.
That means.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of people who, like, came from other parts of the country and they live in the city now. And so they think they're, like, superior to people who live, like, in Evanston or something like that. And I'm like, first of all, you grew up in, like, I don't know, some, like, little town in Iowa. Like, where? You know, I'm totally one of those people. Like, my husband says that I'm a city snob or a Chicago snob. Because I told him, I go, well, the thing that makes me mad is, like, people probably look, you know, people look at me and they think I wasn't born in the city. And I'm not saying that it gives me bragging rights, but I'm like, listen, man, I've been around the city. Whenever people start lecturing me about the city who, like, just have been here for, like, a few years, I'm like, yeah, okay, I've been here. I've seen the changes. And I definitely saw the stuff with the Chicago Public Schools. I did pay attention to the Bears in the 85 season. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying that I've been around. And I just, I don't like it when people lecture me and act like they're more city than I am. And then
I just don't understand why it would be I'm thinking about this. I'll set it up again and then re-ask the question. The city of Chicago versus Arlington Heights. Arlington Heights tells the Bears, no, we're not going to give you this handout because we want the money for our schools because we believe in our children. The city of Chicago says, oh, Bears, here's some money. We don't care about our children. We'll let our schools go bankrupt. Why, Chicagoans, do you think you're superior if you grow up in Chicago where they're so dumb, they deprive their schools of the money they need to function and give it to billionaires, as opposed to Arlington Heights, which protects the needs of its children and says no to the billionaires? Help me out. Go.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, yeah, the Bears, the Cubs, the Sox, they're all like Chicago teams. I get, like, you know, people want to keep them in Chicago, but at what cost, right? And now I feel like I'm my dad. My dad, like, would always get mad when he, and my dad passed away in 2006, rest in peace. But I remember he would complain about how Americans put sports over education. He's like, oh, that guy gets so much money. And then I'm like, are you jealous? You know, when he talk about athletes. And we'd all be making fun of him. We're like, are you jealous? He's like, yeah. He goes, this country puts like athletes above like scientists. And now I feel like I agree with him. I mean, education's not valued as much as it should be in a certain realm. Like, my dad would also get mad about like sports always being on the front page. He'd get mad at my brother because he'd always see, like, he knew my brother. He'd be like, I know how you read the paper is because I see the sports section. This one, the Tribune. And he'd be getting mad at my brother. He's like, why do you read about the real news? Why is the sports like, and you know, I understand the, you know, why sports are important, but I do think there is this, like, I do think that we put too much emphasis in sports in this country where it's just like, it's like it trumps everything else. And I do think I'm someone who likes sports, but I just feel like, yeah, like, why isn't that, like, we put sports and war money. We always seem to have the money when it comes to funding sports teams and funding wars, but we don't have money when it comes to like housing, homelessness, you know, migrants. But we somehow happen to come up with the money and ways to fund and come up with formulas and ways to fund and send billions of dollars to kill more people. So I don't know, Ben, I feel like the older I get, the less I understand about what our country and what our goals are in this country.
I'm with you 100%. And I feel the same way. And we did a show, which by the time this drops, we'll have already dropped, with Delia Ramirez, the congresswoman, and we were going through all the votes she had, the significant votes that she had cast in Congress over last week. And two of them had to do with huge appropriations of money for wars, the aid package to Israel and the aid package to Ukraine. And, you know, it's just madness. There was no great huge debate over sending more money to Chicago for public schools. That's for certain. In fact, part of the reason why the public schools are facing this financial crisis is because the feds aren't sending in any more COVID money. Chicago is getting COVID money. And I was like, let's keep the COVID thing going. Let's just keep the COVID. I don't understand why we're, you know, why we stop funding. Oh, Lord. There's so much money in the federal budget, Ramona. Why can't they just keep the COVID money coming? I don't understand.
I don't understand either, Ben. We're both equally confused.
Yeah. They just, a lot of people hate Chicago and they hate the people who live in it for a lot of different reasons. And the people who live in Chicago are so used to fighting each other. We're kind of lost our mind too. That's kind of how I look at it as well. But I'm with you 100%. And I say this, well, now let me ask you this though. So I hear what your dad was saying, and I'm asking this question out of total ignorance because I do not know the answer to it. So relying on you. But isn't it much the same in India with their reverence for sports? India, the country. Yeah. Well, don't they love cricket or whatever, you know? Well, I mean, soccer.
It's pretty interesting because, like, historically, India, there's always been sports in India, but the emphasis hasn't really been on like playing sports. I think that's been more in recent years. Like, you know, we basically didn't have that many Olympians. I remember watching the Olympics when I was a kid, and I'd be like telling my dad, I'm like, how come there's not more Indians like playing sports? And he's like, he got really mad. He's like, what are you talking about? There's a lot of Indians who do this. And I'm like, I never see them, or they never make it that far. So I remember we're all kind of like laughing about it. But in the last couple of years, I just think that there needs to be a balance. I think playing sports is great. Like I was telling Mick, basketball is taking over the world because you see basketball courts in India now. Nobody's going to play American football in India. Cricket's a big deal. Sports are a big deal in India, but it's mostly for the rich. And I think one of the good things is the poorer people would play like soccer, you know, football, what they call in India. But now I feel like more middle class and kids from like different backgrounds are playing sports. There's a lot more women playing sports. Maybe about 15, 20 years ago, there was a young woman named Samia Mirza. She was a tennis player. She was ranked like, you know, all over the world. She was not that high up there, but in India, she was like revered. I would see pictures of her all everywhere. Before, you would just see pictures of Bollywood stars everywhere in India. Now you see more pictures of athletes. And I think that's a good thing. I think there needs to be like, you know, exercising, athleticism. It's a good thing. I don't know if the players get like contracts of like $200 million. But I also think like when it comes to equity in sports, I still think our country always puts male athletes above female athletes. You look at someone like Caitlin Clark. I remember we were talking about it a few days ago, Ben. She barely, like the first year she's making, I know she's getting most of her money from like endorsements, but when I look at the WNBA salaries compared to the NBA salaries, I mean, I still think I get mad at the inequities too, because it's like, well, why are these men getting millions and millions of dollars? And I know it's demand, but it's like, well, it depends on what we put out there and what we tell people to think is important. So I think there's a lot of discussions about this. I do think athletes deserve money, and I think they deserve like a high contract, but we need to also put money into different things. And that's the things we don't do.
So I'll put it this way. If there's a situation, and I know you're going to come up with an example as soon as I finish this sentence. If there's a situation where a male movie star in Hollywood gets more money for essentially the same role as in the movie as a woman movie star in Hollywood, that's inequity. That has to be rectified, in my humble opinion. And I know there's examples of this. I just can't, at the moment, I can't think of any, but I can recall stories where some like a Brad Pitt got more money than his woman co-star. It was outrageous. But in terms of basketball, where we're at right now, the women's game is just emerging. Women's game, in terms of basketball, does not have the draw that the men's game does. That is changing. That will change in our lifetime. And it'll take a long time before the Angel Reese's of the world make as much as even like the Kobe Whites of the world. That's an analogy that basketball fans will know and the rest of the world won't know. But I don't even know if it'll happen in my lifetime, Romana, but the gap will start to close as more people show up to Sky games. Like right now, the Bulls, It's mad. Steve Greenberg, who's hilarious, by the way. Shout out Steve Greenberg. I don't know the guy, but Mick and I talk about him all the time. I think he's really the funniest columnist in the city of Chicago. And he's always making fun of Bulls fans like me and your husband, because we go to the games, even though the Bulls stink. We pay, Romana, okay, to go to these games. You don't have that in women's basketball. You don't have like the equivalent of Mix and Ben's paying unbelievable amounts of money to go see a crummy Chicago Sky team. Until you have that, Caitlin Clark's of the world won't make as much as the DeMar DeRozan's of the world. And that's just the reality. That will change. Do you think that'll ever happen, by the way?
I think so. I feel like it's changing already. Like, I mean, okay, I'm probably part of the problem because I haven't been to a WNBA game yet, but I also have to tell you that I'm not the one that has been, it's not me that's going to the Bulls game. It's me being taken to the Bulls game. So, but I do like, I mean, I think it's cool. Like actually when I go to a Bulls game, I was telling Mick, I'm like, wow, this is like, cause you know, compared to the Cubs, this is like a totally racially diverse crowd. I feel like, wow, these are my people here, you know? So, I do like that about basketball. And that's one of the things I do feel like basketball. I always have this argument with Mick too. I think it's going to surpass football in the future. Maybe not in the near future because we always, but I think that I just feel like, I don't know, anecdotally, I feel like all the kids that I know, all my friends' kids, and all my nephews and nieces, maybe not on Mick's side, but none of them care about football. My nephews and nieces, the ones blood related to me, don't care about football. Mick's nephew, niece and nephews might care more about football than the ones on my side. But I just feel like, you know, my brother and his friends like football more than their kids do.
Wow.
And basketball, I feel like is just, I think it's just like, it's just attracting a diverse crowd. And like I said, in India, like you see basketball courts now. So and soccer, I think that those are the two sports that are going to take over. Yes, not in maybe our lifetime, but I think they're eventually going to take over. And I do think women's basketball is going to get more and more popular because, you know, the Sky, they won the championship a couple of years ago. And that's something that I actually wrote an editorial on behalf of the Sun-Times about how like none of our teams won a championship except the Sky that year. I think it was 2022, maybe.
It's 3 years, okay? The Sky, they've been going downhill. I follow the Sky.
And they did win and nobody was like treating them like that. You know, I know it's not like the Bears, but... or the Bulls, but it's kind of like, I think people are paying attention more. And I think a lot of young women, you know, you hear more about young women playing sports. And so I think it's changing. I think the culture is going to change a bit.
So you can't force somebody. See, that's the thing. So yeah, when the Bears win, well, they haven't won. No, they did win in your lifetime. You were like 8 or whatever you were.
I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. So that's how long ago it was. So, but when a male team in Chicago wins a championship, generally the editorial is like, oh my God, what a great thing it is for the city of Chicago. We're basking in the glory of it. When the Sky wins, it's chiding Chicagoans for not supporting the team more. And it's like, you can't force people. It's not like the city of Chicago paying a woman less to sue the same exact job that a man does. You have to build your audience. And
no, true. But you know what? I think there's also this mentality. Mick always tells me like, when we first got married, he told me he didn't like the NFL, right? But then sometimes he has the Bears game in the background. And then he tells me like, oh, when you talk to people in the city, you got to know about the Bears. And I'm like, that's not true. So like, I mean, I think that's like, I mean, like, why do you have to make that? And he's like, oh, every time I go anywhere, everybody talks about the Bears. I'm like, well, nobody talks about it with me. So he was just, so it's like also this mentality that everybody thinks that you have to know about football. Why? You don't have to. I don't know anything about it.
So I'm going to deal with that because I've heard you say that Mick, quoting Mick, and I completely disagree with Mick on this point.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't agree with everything he says. Okay. I'm just pointing that out. Yeah. So if you love the Bears, you love the Bears, and if you're obsessive about the Bears, you do it because it's kind of been drilled into you and you love it. And it's hard to explain. Like I'm going to do this is, you're going to laugh at this. And in a million years, you will never listen to this show. Moise Bawani is coming on next week. He's a football coach here in the city of Chicago. Absolutely knows more about football than anyone I've ever met, Ramana. This guy knows so much about football. We're going to spend at least an hour dissecting the Chicago Bears draft choices, breaking them. We're not going to talk about the stadium. He's against it as much as I am, spending money on a public stadium. He's a public school teacher. The point is, it's like it's in his heart. No one said, oh, Moise, you have to learn about football so you can go converse with someone at a restaurant.
You don't have to. That's what I was trying to tell Mick. I'm like, I don't have to love the Bears to talk to anybody from Chicago. I'm from here. I go, maybe for men it's different. That's what I told him. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay.
No,
I,
it's not different. I don't pay attention to any of that. Follows football because he's addicted to it, and he's pretending he's not addicted to it. He's embarrassed that he's addicted to it, and he wishes that he wasn't addicted to it. It's not he's following football so he can go talk to, I don't know, Joe Moore. Hey Joe, what about the Bears? No,
he doesn't watch the Bears game, but he like watches college football more. And but his whole thing is like when we first got married, he was telling me like how everybody talks about the Bears. I'm like, I don't talk about the Bears.
No,
like,
I know I would say half of the city doesn't talk about the Bears. Right now, here we go. Can you name the Bears head coach?
No. I know who was on the tip of my tongue, but
didn't can you name like one Bears coach other than Mike Ditka in the whole history of the Bears?
Lovie Smith? Or
yeah. That's really good. My wife could do Lovie Smith. No. One time I showed the Sun-Times had a huge front page. Oh, I shouldn't say this, but she laughed. I wrote about it, actually. It was a huge picture on the sports page of Lovie Smith. I picked it up. I showed it to my wife. I go, can you identify this person? And Lovie was wearing a Bears cap. So my wife said, Brian Urlacher? Because that was the only Bear she could think of. So
most- what I'm saying, like, so like people like me, like I know the Sun Times, we cover a lot of Bears, right? But like people like me, like we like just look over it, like, you know, like I, it's not, and I'm from the Sun, I'm an employee of the Sun Times, and I'm like, I just don't pay attention to it, you know? And my brother loves sports, you know, he's not a huge Bears fan, but he knows everything. He's like one of those people who knows, like, you know, everything about sports. Like, he makes fun of Mick for liking Northwestern football so much. And my brother's a Northwestern grad too, but he makes fun of people who are overly zealous about Northwestern sports, including Mick. But Mick is like, your brother knows more about Northwestern sports than I do. And so I go, yeah, because my brother follows like every single sport. So it's funny. Yeah. Like people who pay attention. And I'm not like, I'm not denigrating people for liking sports. I think it's a good thing. I like sports more than a lot of my female friends. I should say straight female friends, or like, I don't know, like, you know, because a lot of women will say I love sports. They probably love sports more than I do. But like compared to a lot of my friends, they don't pay attention at all. Yeah. And I have one or two friends who pay attention a little bit more than I do. But I always tell Mick, I'm like, I'm never going to follow the Cubs the way you and my brother do. It's just not who I am. It's like he'll listen to the radio any chance he gets. When we go to my brother's house, you'll have something on the TV. You know what I mean? So it's just like, and I'm not like saying you could have your own interest in it, but I think people don't get that there's some people who aren't into it. And I feel like it is being forced on some people sometimes, like when they don't want to watch like a certain sport, it's like, no, you better watch this. And
yeah, I could tell you right now that the divide in this in our culture between sports obsessed people and non sports obsessed people is pretty deep, and I know this because I walk in both worlds. I'm in worlds filled with people who know nothing about sports, don't care about sports. Like if you tell them, literally, if you tell them something about sports at noon, by 1 o'clock PM, they will have forgotten what you told them. Maybe by 12:30, maybe by 12:15.
Maybe by 12:05.
12:05. It's like, is he done? So I could stop listening or pretending I'm listening. So, you know, I get that.
I sit at the dinner table and Mick starts telling me about things that I don't really care about. Yeah, and I'm like, I don't, you know, he's like, oh, do you know who this person is? I'm like, I don't know. And then he'll be like telling me about things. And then he'll get mad when I'm like on my phone, like texting my friends about something more interesting.
Yeah. So. But yeah, so I to the point about the Bears, the obsession in this town over the Bears is so intense. It's so insane. The Sun-Times sports section proves it out. And this is a favorite topic of conversation between McDumpty and myself.
Yeah, I know.
Obsessive amounts of coverage on the Bears. Unbelievable amounts of coverage on the Bears. And I say this as a sports addict. Okay? Too much, guys. There's other sports out there. You're ignoring high school sports. And I'm sure it's driven by some kind of study or some kind of survey or clicks or whatever. But I'll tell you what. So to my point, and then we'll leave this. I'm going to give a shout out to Steve Greenberg. He wrote a column in today's paper that was really sweet. It was about this shortstop for the Houston Astros baseball team whose grandfather is Don Kessinger. He used to play for the Cubs. And that was years ago that Don Kessinger played for the Cubs. It was a very sweet column about this Don Kessinger's love for his grandson and his grandson's love for Don Kessinger. And I just thought, you know what? Why can't our sports pages have more articles like this that are not just obsessive analysis of who the Bears may take in the 24th round? Why can't we allow our writers to show what their gifts, their talents, their ability to tell a story, their ability to tell a narrative? You know what I'm saying, Ramona?
Steve Greenberg, I met him for the first time a couple years ago. Like, we had a party, like, when things started opening up after like the height of the pandemic, and I have to tell you, he's just as funny as he is in his columns, and he's really smart. And he went to Whitney Young or Lane, no. Lane Tech, I think. Cause he went to Lane Tech with somebody that I went to Sunday school with. So he's all classmates with somebody I know, which is crazy. And they're either in the newspaper together, and it's like, so I'm like, wait, you have a mutual Facebook friend. So he's a local guy too. And he lives, I believe he lives in Evanston, but he was pretty funny when he was talking about sports. Cause I was telling him that I have a sports obsessed husband. And he's like, you know, he told me when you become a sports writer, you end up hating sports more than you like it. He goes, covering it is not, he goes, you know, a lot of men who love sports probably think it's like the best job in the world, men and women, I should say. And he goes, it isn't. And when we're talking about female sports, we have always had female sports writers, but now we have women like sports writers, Annie Constable, I think I'm pronouncing him right. She's somebody that covers the WNBA and women's sports, and I think she does a great job. And our Cubs beat writer is also a woman. So I think that's pretty cool. I have a love really hate relationship with sports. Like, I'm like you, Ben. You like sports. I probably like it a little less than you do, but I do have questions about when it comes to spending money on these teams.
All right. So we're going to leave the realm of sports, but since you mentioned Annie Constable, who is the beat writer for the Sun-Times for the Sky, I have to just say one thing to her. I think she does a great job. I think she's a great beat writer. She has personality and flair in her story. So give her a raise sometimes. That said, I'm speaking to you, Annie, right now as one of your diehard readers, okay? You are so tough. Oh, my God. The Sky had a most incredible draft last week. They drafted Camila Cardoso, and they drafted Angel Reese. I got to tell you, Ramona, I've never exchanged so many text messages with people about a Sky draft. I can't tell you how many people were like sending pictures of the players from the draft. We're so excited. We're going to go to games. We're going to buy tickets. She gives them a B minus. I'm like, a B? What the heck? God damn. Thank God, Annie, you are not my teacher back at Evanston High School in the old. I'd still be at Evanston. You'd still be flunking me. What do you got to do to get an A in this town? Sorry, Ramona, I just had to get that off my chest.
No, no, that's okay. It's good.
Too tough, man. Too tough. I think the Sky should have gotten an A for that draft. All right, we're going to close with this. This is be abbreviated conversation about a topic we talk about many times. So my column next week will be a long, I hope, funny story about Sherman Alexie, the great novelist, short story writer, and your husband, Mick Dumke. Okay. It's a long, involved story. I won't go into the details now, other than to say, I hope everybody enjoys it. And the next time Mick and you are in the show, we'll talk about it. But when I've told people that I just finished reading this collection of Sherman Alexie stories, and I'm a big fan of Sherman Alexie's writing, his novels and his short stories, invariably the response is, didn't he get caught up in a sexual harassment scandal? And I had a vague memory of it. And it just brings back that old, that old dilemma that we have talked about so many times, Ramana. Like, when do you separate your appreciation for a person's work of art from the sleaziness of their life or some of the nasty things they've done in their life? And I don't have an answer to this one. You know, I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit how much I still enjoy Michael Jackson's songs when they come on the radio and stuff. And I'm a big fan of Sherman Alexie. I need help. I need guidance. Ramana, help me out here.
I think, remember, Ben, we just talked about this off air. I think when you don't follow someone from before or you didn't like them from before, like me and Woody Allen, it's easy to be like canceled. I don't have to watch any Woody Allen movies anymore. Nobody can force me. The one good thing about it is, you know, all the people who told me Woody Allen was so awesome, like after all these, like, you know, allegations come out, now nobody feels like they can force me to, you know, tell me to have to watch a Woody Allen movie because he's so wonderful, because it makes people kind of shut up and say, like, you know, not force Woody Allen down my throat. But with Sherman Alexie and Michael Jackson, I think people are a little more torn because they're so talented. With Michael Jackson, I don't think anybody from my generation, like, or anybody around the world, unless you're sitting under a rock, doesn't know a Michael Jackson song or the height of his fame. Like, I've never seen anything like it in my generation. Like, I wasn't around for the Beatles' height of fame. Duran Duran were like a British band that was like popular. Like, you know, people kind of compared them to the Beatles. But I think the Michael Jackson phenomenon for my generation, like, I don't even consider myself a huge fan. I was for a little bit. And when I was in junior high, like, there's some songs I love by Michael Jackson and I still listen to them. I don't turn them off on the radio or anything like that. And with Sherman Alexie, you know, I grew up in a time where, you know, there were very few stories about Native Americans that were by Native Americans and for Native Americans or had them from their perspectives. You know, we had a lot of movies in the 90s, like Dances with the Wolves, that looked at the Native Americans from like, oh, there's this white protagonist, like, you know, Dustin Hoffman, what is it called? Little Big Man. I remember I was shown that in school. It was always this white guy who decides to become like, go quote unquote, go Native, right? And so Sherman Alexie, like we were talking about this, like Smoke Signals, that was revolutionary, sadly, in the late 90s for like, you know, it was like based on his short story. Reservation Dogs was a show on Hulu that was probably inspired by a lot of his work. So, you know, he has inspired a lot of, you know, a different way of looking at Native Americans as actual human beings instead of these caricatures. So he does have a place. I could see people still reading him. But, you know, the sad thing is, like, when I hear Sherman Alexie now, that's the first thing I think of now as a woman. And I know for a lot of, it's like you automatically think about that because I saw a lot of women coming out of the, you know, just coming out and just saying, like, you know, Sherman Alexie, I thought he was a mentor, but, you know, he kind of was using his power and status to kind of treat women a certain way. And it is disappointing. I think, I don't know, I think a lot of women have a hard time kind of reconciling that with when it comes to, especially, you know, now that women can, you know, before it was like you brush it off, right? People would say like men will be men. And now, you know, men are, you know, or women for that matter, for any sort of transgression should be held accountable. So I don't know. You always kind of, now when I hear his name, that's the first thing I think of. And it's sad, but it also kind of shows that we should be taking people accountable for things like that. But I don't expect you to like, throw burn his books or like be like, I'm not going to read Sherman Alexie anymore. I think it's just good to have that in your back of your mind. And yeah, I know people are complex. I know that's one of the things that a lot of people say whenever there's someone who's either racist or sexist or does horrible things. And so I think there's just questions out there. I think it's good just to hold people accountable. That's the number one thing.
All right. So Rachel Hinton and I started our book club. You had not done the assignments, or you were not invited to the first session.
Yeah, I still got to read James, I admit.
It was a great show, if I must say so myself. It was a lot of fun, and we're going to continue it. And since I picked James, she gets to pick the next book. So she's going to select the next book. I think she already has. So I was thinking of selecting Sherman Alexie's, these short stories, War Dance, I've been texting back and forth with her about it, and she has no objection to it. Okay, if I do select it, because I feel so strongly about how evocative and powerful these books are, these stories are in War Dance, and how it's stuck with me for a long time. Would you have an objection to being in a book club where a Sherman Alexie book is about to be read?
No, but I think that if I was in a book club with people, we would talk about that. Like, that would be something that would come up in discussion. Would it be the only thing we talk about? No, we'd probably talk about the book, but then we would probably talk about how do you separate the art from the artist. I think any book club that I would be part of, any of my friends, I think we would bring that up. But yeah, I think that's, I think he's just so revered. I think you can still read it. And I think you can still be critical of what he did outside of his actual writing. I think you can do both. Like I said, I think accountability and calling people out is the number one thing, but that doesn't diminish his work, I guess. I guess it does tarnish it a little, but I don't think that you should stop reading him.
Yeah. So here, and we'll close with this, in terms of your Woody Allen worldview. I feel that in the abstract, the same thing you just said about Sherman Alexie could be said about Woody Allen, except for this point. Woody Allen's depravity
wasn't his art.
It was there for the world to see in Manhattan.
In a movie like Manhattan. Like, it's like, I never saw it, but it's like, I don't know how anybody watched that movie with a straight face and like was acting like it was normal for him to be dating a high school girl, you know, the man in his 40s. So it's like his art is actually emulating his life.
Yeah. And so that's the difference. Anyway, all right, we have run out of time. And just so the world knows, this is a Wednesday show. I just got a text from a listener or a friend and telling me that the Bears had their press conference. They revealed their pictures while we were having this conversation. And according to what my friend told me, Mayor Johnson was there. So the city, it looks like the city is getting behind this. This is breaking news. Of course, by the time you hear this recording, it'll be such old news. But I could just see the next Romano. No, it's probably, you won't be assigned to write this.
I'm not the Bears expert. That's what I said. I admit it.
In terms of the editorial on the stadium, it'll be the great Lee Bay, probably the one who's been killing it on Sun-Times editorials. I guess I'm not supposed to reveal who writes the editorial, but he's
written some columns with his name on it too. He's like an expert when it comes to architecture and design. He's definitely the expert.
So we'll see if we'll leave it. I'll leave it here. Brandon Johnson, apparently, according to what my friend just texted me, was at the press conference with the Bears and Baylor Stadium and plans for the lakefront. We'll see if that downtown Gold Coast, north side Lincoln Park crowd will be a little more receptive to Brandon Johnson now that he's jumped aboard their bandwagon. My guess is they'll stab him in the back. That's just my guess, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Romana, thank you very much. I'll let you get back to your work day and talk to you real soon, all right?
Talk to you later.
All right, that's great. Romana Hussein, I'm Ben Drosky. Take care, everybody.